Melbourne, Australia, Melissa Creamer on iTunes International.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around your world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia. Melissa Creamer is our correspondent in Melbourne, but she can't seem to stay in Australia for more than 5 minutes. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Hi, Henry. Thanks for having me on.
Where have you been this time?
I've just got back from 10 days in Thailand.
Wow. And I noticed that I've been to Bangkok. In fact, I might have met you in Bangkok.
You have. Actually, we did have drinks in Bangkok once upon a time.
Was that the top of a very big hotel?
We went to one of the Sky Bars where before they were super popular, and if I recall correctly, you weren't dressed appropriately and they had to give you some clothes.
Yes, that was, I think that was a very tall building.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. I always remember going, sorry?
On the 65th floor.
Oh my God. And the views of Bangkok were amazing.
Yes, definitely stunning.
Do you know what I remember about this, Melissa? When we were going into that hotel, they were putting these devices underneath cars to make sure there was no car bombs. And I thought that was really, it was really strange. Anyway, you've been to Thailand before?
Yes, I used to live there.
Okay, that was a rhetorical question, I think.
Yes.
I used to live there. Interesting. Yes. It's a very different place. Tell me about your experiences living in Thailand. Do you speak the local language at all?
I picked up a little bit of Thai, and I managed to speak English with a Thai accent when I'm there, which is interesting. And when I went back this time, and I used the basic Thai words they had, a couple of people commented that my accent was really good, so I felt very privileged. It's a weird thing, Henry. Lately, I've noticed that I'm forgetting things. Like, you know, you go to remember an actor's name or something, and then your brain takes a lot longer, and you end up having to use Google. And it's really concerning. But then I go to Thailand, and the last time I was there was 2019. And then suddenly I'm remembering the words for pineapple and goodnight and all these words that I haven't used for 4+ years, and they're all floating around in the back of my brain. So that made me feel a lot more confident that maybe I'm not getting too old just yet.
Yes, no Alzheimer's for you right now. You're in your late 40s, and I find the same thing, but then again, I'm on chemo. That's my excuse. But as you get older, you do tend to kind of start forgetting things. Like walking into, you know, when you walk into another room in your house to get something and you're there and you think, what did I come in here for in the first place? Do you get that?
Exactly. But to answer your question about what it was like to live there, I'm going to circle this back to being single. So I first worked in Bangkok in 2001, and to have a joke about how hard it is to meet people. And there is the English language newspaper in Bangkok is called the Bangkok Post. And a female journalist wrote an article and she called it Sexless Insect City. Because, you know, Sex in the City was a very popular TV show at the time. Yeah. And we had it in our work office on the wall because we were all going through this as females. And being a non-Thai woman or a non-Thai Asian, a non-Asian person in Thailand, woman, guys didn't tend to be interested in you because they would go for the local girls. So it was very hard to kind of date back then. So when I lived in Thailand, it was very difficult. You'd have to get yourself into, an expat scene to kind of meet people. But then most of the guys were interested in local girls. So, and of course, when I lived there, they didn't have online dating apps and things like that. So it was difficult. Also, they didn't have a lot of clothes for Western women at that time. So going there now, there's a lot more larger sizes available, not just for foreigners, but for the locals. So I don't know if Thais have put on weight post-COVID, but that was something that I noticed because I used to struggle. And when I lived there, I was a lot thinner than I am now. And I remember being...
Sorry, that's just a motorbike here on Bondi Beach. My apologies.
I remember being, when I was, you know, I was there when I was 28 and I was 48 kilos. And even then I was in XXL pants if I bought them from a department store. So
yeah, well, it's worth mentioning that Thai people are by nature slimmer than people in the so-called Western world, a term I hate, but I keep using for some reason. And I suppose, you know, you talk about XL as in a size in Thailand. Did you, you know, at that time, it sounds like you were very slim at the time, actually, even by...
I was like a size 8 for a size 10.
Yeah.
And I was XXL.
Yeah.
Clothing there.
Do you think that, you mentioned that local Thai men like local women, and I find this...
Thai women is what I was getting at.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, sorry, that makes sense.
Yes, Florence, like, sorry if I didn't make that clear.
No, you did make it clear. It's me who didn't make it clear.
Yes, but also, Thai... I hate to say this because I sound like I'm generalizing, but, you know, Thai women have a reputation, but so do Thai men. And I was just, that's not something that I was interested in.
Mm.
You know, and we all have our preferences, right? I mean, I know what I like.
Yeah.
I like Mediterranean guys.
You like, sorry, say that again?
Mediterranean type men.
Right. And you know, of course, you've traveled the world extensively.
Yes.
When you lived in Thailand those years ago, did you find culture similar to the so-called West, as I keep on using that term, or was it a very different experience? And also, you've just been to Thailand. How have things changed apart from plus sizes in clothes?
So the cultural question's a good one. It's very, very different. For example, in Buddhist countries, the top of your head is the most sacred part of your body, and the feet is the lowest part. And so you should never touch anybody on the head. You can touch a child on the head, but no adults. So the head is quite sacred. And as a follow-up on that, because the feet are the lowest part of the body, right? Mm. You have to be mindful what you do with them. So when you go to someone's house in Thailand or a temple, you've got to remove your shoes. You should never put your feet on the table because the table is where you eat and you're putting the lowest form of your body on a high place. You should never sit on a pillow meant for your head because you're putting your butt on the pillow when the head's the highest part. And it's small things like this that can catch some foreigners out, and they often will offend Thais, but then Thais are often too polite to say anything about that. And they don't want to lose face as well. So they'll often tell you something that you want to hear rather than tell you the truth because they think that's worse. Whereas me as a Westerner, I feel like you're losing face by lying. So, you know, this time I had an issue with some PowerPoints in my hotel and I brought it up to reception twice and they said, we'll send a technician. And I knew they were saying that to make me feel better, but they didn't send a technician.
Oh.
And I just stopped asking. But another thing to do with the head, if you and it's funny because when I go back to Thailand, these things I pick up on again. And they're like second nature to me because I spent so much time there. The king's image is on the money, okay?
Yep.
So if you drop a coin, our natural instinct in the West would be to stomp on it to stop it from rolling. But if you did that in Thailand, you would cause great offense to the locals because you're putting the lowest part of your body, your foot, on not just
the king's head.
The king's head.
Oh.
So I'm very cautious of if I'm drop money not to tread on it. And likewise, when I pay for something, I always get the note out, I open it up, and I pass the note to them with in between my thumb and my index finger and I present the money to them because the king's image is on it. Whereas a foreigner who will just scrunch the paper piece of money up and throw it, that's causing offence. So it's little things like this. And when I was in Thailand this time, I went to the cinema kind of for old time's sake. I was in an old shopping centre that I used to frequent, and I was feeling a bit nostalgic. And also, it was a movie I really wanted to see, and the cinema's really cheap. Now, when you go to the cinema in Thailand, before they screen the movie, they pay a homage to the king, and they have music and then images of the king, and you've got to pay your respect before the cinema, before the movie starts. So they play all of the advertisement, then they do the respect for the king, and then the movie starts. And so when the respect for the king comes on, you stand up. And it was interesting, I was the only person standing in the cinema, and I think it was full of foreigners. So
wow.
I still stood. And what I noticed previously, I believe the former king wrote the national anthem because he was a saxophone player, and he was very much into jazz. And the music that I heard at the cinema being played for the new king was different.
Wow.
So it's just an observation. And they play the national anthem twice a day. Now, I believe the first one is at 8 a.m. and the second one is at 6 p.m. And if you're in a public space and the national anthem comes on, you've got to stand where you are and observe it for a minute, and then you can move on. And so there are Thais that do, there are Thais that don't. Because I first went there in like 2001 for work, it's something that I've always observed. And so, you know, I heard it come on and I was like, oh, I'm just going to stop, because I knew what it was, right? So there are little cultural things like that. And as someone who's a visitor, even when I lived there, I was a visitor, I paid attention to them.
Yes.
And something that's second nature to me when I go there now. I don't even really think about it much.
It sounds like, obviously, you know, I've been to Thailand, obviously, and there seems to be, well, I think their money is made from tourists, but it sounds like many tourists don't really know their culture very well. Clearly you do. I was with my brother-in-law, Bruce, who introduced me to you because you both worked in the travel industry, and that's why you're on this show now. And it's interesting because when I was in Thailand, I noticed a lot of ladyboys. Now, I don't know if that's a Thai thing. It's obviously a global thing, but I found that very interesting. It seemed very prominent there, and no one. And also another thing is that, you know, young men will walk around the streets with their arms around each other. It's nothing to do with being gay. It's a very different perspective on how they interrelate, wouldn't you say, Melissa?
Yes. So, and I only learnt this recently, but ladyboy is seen as a third gender. So they're not necessarily trans, and please forgive me because I don't want to speak on behalf of anyone. But in Thailand, the ladyboy is considered to be a third gender. The Thai word for it is katoy. And so you're not a man and you're not a woman. You're a katoy. And they're very much accepted by Thai culture and society. And back in the 80s, I believe, Thailand was the sex change capital of the world. And I haven't looked at statistics recently, so I would be very, very interested to see what that's like, what the percentages are like now. So it's they've always been there in Thailand from when I've there. I really haven't done the research to say how far back this dates in their history to say since when it's been socially acceptable, but. No one ever blinked an eyelid at that when I was there.
Is same-sex marriage legal?
That's a good question. I can't say that I know, Henry.
Yeah, because it really doesn't seem to matter in Thailand, you know. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but, you know, you have to question whether it matters.
You know, the sex tourism started because of Pattaya and its close proximity to Vietnam. So when American GIs had their R&R, they went to Pattaya, and that's how the foreign sex industry started in Thailand. prostitution and visiting brothels is a part of Thai culture and society. And when I was, you know, visiting rural areas, there were brothels everywhere, and it's not uncommon for Thai men to go and visit a prostitute. And I think the old statistic that I knew way back in the day was that 90% of Thai men visited prostitutes, and there was quite a lot that did it once a month. And so that side of Thailand's always been there, but it was the American GIs that kind of kicked it off for the foreigners. So sex sells. It's a massive industry. But what's interesting now, since I've lived there, in the last 12 months, marijuana has become legalized.
Of course, Thailand. Yes.
And that was something that I still don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I don't care if you want to smoke marijuana. I'm glad that it's legal. What I'm torn with is the amount of marijuana stores there are in Thailand.
Yes, and that has made international news, Melissa. And by the way, if you've just joined us, I'm talking with our Melbourne correspondent, Melissa Greimer, who has recently been in Thailand. That made international news about the amount of shops that just sprung up selling grass.
They are. To be fair, I was in Bangkok and I was in Chiang Mai, and they're everywhere. And, you know, I walked around Chiang Mai and out of the tourist areas, and the marijuana shops are everywhere. And the smell of pot is everywhere. Like I said, I don't care if you want to smoke, but I just thought, it's too much in your face, and I don't feel like that's a good look if you're traveling to Thailand with a family. But then again, I was like, okay, is this any different to seeing a bunch of people sitting around drinking beer, if you really want to compare it?
Yep.
So that's what I struggled with.
Sure, absolutely. And the other thing to note is that alcohol can incite violence. Grass rarely does.
Yes.
I'm just wondering if, you know, in recent years, the United States has legalized cannabis for recreational use, and I'm wondering if Thailand follows that.
Hey,
Sydney, Australia, Henry O'Donovan on Bondi Tunes International.
You mentioned how Thai people love their king. It reminds me of, in the UK, the British loved their queen and now their king, and it was also on all their notes. Thailand was never actually colonized, according to Wikipedia. Gotta say hello to Wikipedia, because they're our friends, and Bondi Tunes International and Wikipedia talk to each other, and we contribute to them every year. Just saying, that's a plug for Wikipedia, but it says Thailand has never been colonized by the Europeans or any other country.
No, it was smack bang in the middle of Britain on one side with Myanmar and Malaysia, and then with Cambodia, Laos and Vietnam, the French. So, yes, they stayed in the middle. They were never colonized. The big difference between the royal family in the UK and the royal family in Thailand is the Thai royal family is revered, and you won't hear Thai people expressing their opinions on the royal family. And you can't print negative things in the press.
Melissa, would you think that's kind of suppression of freedom of speech?
Well, since the previous Rama the Ninth, since he passed away, I saw, I think during COVID, that young Thais, like 20-year-old Thais and students, were taken to the streets to protest the monarchy. So
really?
I think ideas are changing with the younger generation. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Is it? Yes, I guess it is. It's intertwined with their society and culture. So it's difficult too, because, you know, if you think of a country like Turkey, you're not allowed to openly criticize Muhammad.
Yes, yes, I was interested in that. You know, you mentioned off air just before we started recording that you're hungry. I noticed that you put up posts on social media with lots of pictures of food, which instantly made me hungry. Thai food is fascinating. Tell me about your experiences, and is food a big thing for you when you travel to that country?
Food is a major for me when traveling. It's a hobby of mine. I love food. I love Thai food. When I lived in Thailand previously, I would try and hunt down really good Thai restaurants, and it was a little bit different to the food scene now, because I would find these places that have been around forever and great local stalls, but we didn't really have bloggers or influencers like we do now back then. And so, you know, I'd go somewhere and I'd either read about it or I'd found it and sniffed it out on my own, and you'd have a great meal and you'd go back. And now those same places that I used to visit, one of them's got the Michelin Guide. They do reviews of street food now, and they've got their Michelin star restaurants, but for the street stalls, they've got the Michelin Bib Gourmand, and I'm probably pronouncing that hideously wrong because I don't speak French, but they're street stalls that the Michelin Guide recommend. And so some of my favourites are now in that, and the lines are really long. So,
yes, you know, and you talked about the expense at one stage.
Oh, so
a particular restaurant you went to that's particularly popular, and you paid a lot of money. Get into detail with this, because I'm fascinated.
So there is a very local Thai place. They call it a street stall. You know, she stands on the footpath with a wok, but she's got a restaurant area for you to sit in. And she cooks crab omelette. Now, a few years ago, a food blogger, 5 years ago, 2017, I think it was, a food blogger visited her stall and talked about her crab omelette and her drunken noodles and how popular she was. But she was known amongst locals but not foreigners. And then I don't know if if this food blogger kind of started to put her on the map, but she featured in a Netflix series about food in Asia. And unlike a lot of the other Michelin recommended places that I visited, she's got a plate. And I think she's the only food stall that has a Michelin plate. And don't quote me, but I could be wrong. Okay. Mm. And she is very famous for doing her crab omelette. And, you know, the thing about Thai street food is that it should be
cheap,
really cheap and quick and accessible. And cheap doesn't mean it's not good. Because
No, of course not.
But she stands behind this wok and she still uses charcoal to fire her wok. She doesn't use gas. And she cooks every single dish herself. She doesn't have anyone else working with her, which adds to her popularity. But because she's got this Michelin plate and she was on this Netflix show, her business has blown up and, you know, she has been cited as saying that it ruined her life.
So it's like the American tourists came over and said, "Oh, you're her."
Yes.
But it wasn't good for her life, you mentioned?
No, because now she's a lot busier than she was, and she, like, I have to give my hats off to her. She hasn't changed the way she cooks. I mean, she's obviously got a lot more staff in the background doing the prep work and everything else, but she hasn't hired a sous chef or someone to cook things. She does every single dish herself, which is why it takes so long to get served there.
And you waited that time, didn't you?
Well, the average wait time is 4 hours. I met a guy whose wait time was, 10?
Is it really that important? I mean, look, I'm not a foodie, but I'm fascinated by the fact that people wait, 10 hours, 4 hours. How long did you wait?
I waited, I got lucky, Henry. I went there before 9. And she opens up at 9
a.m., I presume.
Yes, I got there just before 9 a.m., thinking, I'm early. I was number 41.
Oh, my God. Melissa, did you actually go there because of her fame and that kind of stuff, or did you go there for the food?
Well, she's supposed to do a really great omelette, and I wanted to find out what a, you know, 60 Australian dollar crab omelette tastes like, to be fair. And I wanted to know if it was worth the hype.
Yes.
And so
was it?
I'm torn about that. The crab omelette itself, and it's so expensive because she uses a lot of crab, and it's fresh crab and it's massive chunks. And it's rolled up in this egg, like an omelette that she makes. But here's the thing. Did that omelette taste amazing? Yes, it did. But in my opinion, the crab is what made it taste good, not anything she did to it. So the crab was really fresh and like great tasting. But I can't say that there were other flavors that just enhanced that crab. And I mean, she serves it with chili sauce, you know, the red chili sauce, like tomato sauce.
Yes.
And it's like I'm paying $60 for something I'm putting chili sauce on, you know. It was great, but it wasn't the best thing I ate in Thailand. No, the noodles were amazing, and they had this really great char from the charcoal that she used to heat the wok up, and they were stunning. But again, like, they were really expensive. So one bowl of noodles and one omelette was 110 Australian dollars.
But why was it expensive? Now, I understand, and I want to go on a bit of a sideline here. Netflix has a habit of exploding people into the hemisphere of fame. And I wonder if she regrets that. And why is it so expensive? Is it because of the quality of her food or because of her fame?
She said it's because of the quality of the seafood that she uses. And I will give it to her. Like, there's massive chunks of seafood, you know, but similarly. I went to a place in Chinatown that I actually took you to, I remember. If you remember, we were eating seafood on the footpath in Chinatown.
I do remember.
And an elephant was marched past us.
Yes, I do remember that fondly. Now, I'm just wondering about how, you know, she deals with all this fame and all the tourists coming in. And, you know, I feel sorry for her in a way, because she can't really hire other people to do this.
She says that if she does, the food won't be the same. And I agree with her. But as for the price, I brought a bowl of noodles with seafood in Chinatown at that place that I had taken you to. Very famous, you know, footpath seafood restaurant. And their noodles were 200 Thai baht. Whereas her noodles with seafood cost me 1,000 or 1,200 baht.
So what's that in Australian dollars, let's say?
Oh, we're talking about 5 baht compared to, say, 45.
We said
$5 compared to $45.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And I didn't pay that much for a bowl of, like, if I went out to a Thai restaurant here and they wanted to charge me $45, $50 for a noodle dish, I wouldn't pay it. So it is a lot of money, especially in Thailand. The noodles were great, but the noodles weren't great because of the seafood. The noodles were great because, in my opinion, the charcoal and the wok hay that had just engulfed the noodles. So I'm glad that I went. Would I rush back there? No, because there are other amazing places that serve food that is just as good, if not better. And she does say it ruined her life. I heard.
Oh, dear. She actually said that, did she?
Yeah. But I heard that there is a noodle brand called Mammy Noodles, Mama Noodles, which is a Thai brand. And they've just commandeered her to do a Thai noodle flavor. So I think she'll get that and retire.
Well, she'll hopefully have the money to do so.
She's 65, 70 now. Maybe she's over 70. Like,
gosh, yeah.
It's a lot of work for a woman. She's on her feet all day.
Yeah. And, you know, before I realise we've got to go soon because you're hungry.
Okay.
ขุดเรื่องราวของเธอขึ้นมาวนเวียนเรื่อยไปซ้ำๆยิ่งเธอยิ่งใกล้กันก็ยิ่งไม่ง่ายเข้าใจไหมว่าคนที่ถูกทิ้งไปยังต้องมีแผลใจให้คอยดูแลฉันพยายามจะตามแต่เธอก็พยายามจะติดคิดบ้างไหมว่ก็พูดว่าเธอฝากถามอยู่คนเดียวได้ไหมเมื่อไม่มีเธอมันอย่างวันนั้นไม่ว่าสุดท้ายเธอต้องการอะไรอยากให้เธอได้รู้ได้รับเอาไว้นั่นแหละคือที่ฉันไม่เคยต้องการฉันพยายามจะตามก็พยายามจะติดคิดต้องไหมว่ามันผิดที่เธอยังมีเยื่อใยไม่รักไม่ต้องมาแคร์ไม่ต้องมาดีกับฉันไม่รักไม่ต้องมาห่วงไม่ต้องมาห่วงใยฉันไม่ องมาทำอะไรอะไรทั้งนั้นเพราะใจฉันยังอ่อนแอไม่รักไม่ต้องมาโทรมาถามสบายดีไหมเพราะสิ่งเดิมๆของเธอมันทำให้ยิ่งปวดใจหยุดได้ไหมสักทีเธอไม่รักก็ปล่อย
Australia. This is Bondi Tune.
Henry O'Donovan.
Do you think that people, and this may well be a rhetorical question, that people in Asia eat better than people in the so-called Western world, or in developed nations, let's say? I notice, you know, traveling in Asia, that a lot of people, again, sitting on the sides of streets, it seems like they're completely stress-free and they're eating a lot of rice and that stuff. Is it fair enough to say that their diet is a good deal better than us folk?
Thais are obsessed with food. And, you know, you'll meet a Thai person and they'll ask you, have you eaten yet? But they'll ask you, have you eaten rice yet? Like food is such a big part of their culture, and street stalls are everywhere, and the portions aren't big, but they eat a lot and they eat regularly, right? But the look at the Thais. They're not overweight like us.
No.
I know I said that I think, you know, people are getting there, but they're not generally, you know, the food is not that bad. You know, it's quite...
Well, it sounds great to me.
Yeah.
I love Asian food. I'm not a foodie, but I love Asian food.
Yeah. So, I mean, they seem to be a lot healthier than us. I don't think they have the amount of people overweight that we do. I don't know about the diabetes. They do have a lot of sugar over there. That's not something that I'm aware of, but whether it's an issue or not. But, yeah, and I mean, you know, they don't – I think it comes down to portion size, Henry.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know,
yeah. Okay, well,
I went to this restaurant.
Sure.
There was a Michelin recommended place in Chiang Mai, and again, it had a massive line, but not 4 hours. And when I was reading the recommendations, and I went there because a friend who lives in Chiang Mai recommended it, Mandy Kersley, who you know.
Indeed, I do. And
when I was reading the Michelin recommendations, they recommended two dishes there. And so I ordered both, and I was sitting by myself, and The Thai waitress came over with the first dish, and then she came over with the second, and she didn't know who to give it to because I was sitting on a communal table, and I went, that's mine. Yeah. And she looked at me like, it can't be yours. You've already got something. So she was thinking it was very unusual for a person to order two servings of like two different dishes. So I felt like, you know, a big gluttonous Westerner, but I didn't care because the food was incredible.
Yeah, and cheap in that case, obviously. Because we all know, you know, our general understanding is that, you know, food in the place, in places like Bali, which you've been to recently also, and Eastern, so-called Eastern countries, tends to be cheaper. And I'm just, you know, before we go, I'm just wondering, you mentioned that you lived in Thailand. I don't know how long that was for. Was it a year or something? You were a young lady at the time.
I spent 5 years in Thailand all up. I was full-time in Bangkok for 2 years.
Oh, really?
As a tour leader throughout the region, so Indochina and Singapore and Malaysia for 3 years. So, yeah.
The reason I asked you, Melissa, is because you've just been there. At your age now, in your late 40s, so we're talking 20 years later, is that fair enough to say, or 18 years later or something? Would you live there now? Would you live and work there now? Would you leave Australia and live in Thailand now?
It's funny because I was walking around and I was walking through Chiang Mai and I could remember how I felt in my 20s when I was there, so young and optimistic, you know, about the future.
Yes, we're all idealistic at that age, you know.
But it's funny that it came back to me because it's not my normal surrounds. And to be transported to this place and know, like, generally how you were feeling when you were that age, it was something else. And I felt really lucky to have that insight, you know. And I didn't do a lot of touristy stuff and, you know, I did a lot of relaxing, but I also did a lot of walking to combat all the food that I was eating, right?
Yeah.
And I just like how I feel when I live there.
And is it safe to travel alone in Thailand? Were you alone this time when you were in Thailand? And is it safe?
I was alone in Bangkok. I was alone most of the time in Chiang Mai, but I did have friends there. And
yes,
I felt safe. It's not a country where I tend to look over my shoulder. You know, I mean, you're always got to be aware of your surroundings, but I just like the way I feel when I'm there. I could live there again if I had the right job.
Yes.
You know,
So you don't sound, you know, I'm not tied to the country that I always say to people, I'm not a nationalist, I'm a globalist. I hold two passports, one's Irish and one's Australian. And I really have no interest in nationalism, if you like. I guess, you know, if you went to Thailand and lived there, would you miss Australia? And if so, what would you miss about Australia?
I would probably miss the live music scene here in Melbourne. And I would miss my family.
It's always a big deal, the family, isn't it?
Yeah, but then I don't live around them anyway, so what's the...
Well, you're in Melbourne, you come from western suburbs of Sydney, of course.
That's right. So what would I would miss live music, like I said, and going to festivals and touring concerts and things like that. Life is a little bit easier here, you know.
Would you, like, when you were there, you're obviously employed by a company, Intrepid Travel, if I remember correctly, along with Bruce, my brother-in-law. And, you know, you were paid internationally as against locally. I imagine, I'm just wondering, you know, what the tax system would be like there if you pay very little tax.
Well,
you probably don't know the answer to that because you...
No, because I was employed with by a foreign company and paid from their head office.
Of course.
I wasn't paying tax. Yeah. I wasn't really legal, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, so, what the hell? I was in Israel.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the tax thing is like. But now, once you turn 50, Henry, you can go and live in Thailand on a retirement visa.
Oh, well, I'm 61. Let's see how that goes. I wouldn't mind living in Thailand for a while.
Yeah, you have a retirement visa. You've got to have a certain amount of money.
How much?
No, it's not a lot, but you've got to show that you've got enough money to sustain yourself. And, you know, what they require, what we would require, is two completely different things. So,
yes, of course.
You know, that would be something to think about. If I had a good job and the opportunity presented itself, because if I lived in Thailand, I would want to live like an expat. So that means I would want to afford to, you know, go for a nice meal and buy clothes and take taxis and things out when I wanted to.
The expats in Thailand, and there are many of them, they tend to stick together as far as I understand. Is it, you know, when you go to a bar, and I find this interesting, because of living in the United Arab Emirates, where alcohol is illegal for locals, but we went into our own bars, the tourist bars. You mentioned that you were overseas recently in our last broadcast, and I can't remember what it was.
Oman.
That's right, and having difficulty getting a drink in Oman. Yes. What's it like in Thailand? Like, if you lived there, let's say, would you infer that you would stick with the expats? And by the way, is it expensive to buy beer and wine and that kind of stuff in bars?
There's a lot of great bars in Chiang Mai that are frequented by expats and by local Thai people. And I did have Thai friends when I lived there. Beer and alcohol is inexpensive to buy in the supermarket, and you can buy it at 7-Eleven. But it's interesting because you can't buy alcohol between the hours of 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. I think it's 5 and not 6. No, because they want to discourage school kids from drinking it after school.
But is that for tourists as well?
Everybody. You can't get out. Like, you can go to a bar, but you can't buy it over the counter from 7-Eleven or a supermarket between those.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And well, you can't get it after 11 p.m. or 12 p.m. At night, right?
Is there a problem with young people drinking in Thailand?
I guess they want to discourage it. I mean, drinking is a big part of the Thai culture.
I guess so.
You know, a lot of traffic accidents are, there's a lot of drink driving around. It's an issue. So, But I went to one bar and I ordered a vodka soda, and it was like $10 or $12. And I'm like, that's an Australian price.
Mm.
You know, and then I realized that for beers, like a bottle of beer in an area that foreigners would go to was about 100, 120 baht, which is about $6, which is what I'd be paying for a pot here. So, you know.
Yeah, that's quite expensive, I would have thought.
Yeah, but then I went to a Thai bar, a Thai restaurant away from a tourist area, and had amazing Thai food, and there were mostly locals there. And the beer was 70 baht in comparison, so it was cheaper. Yeah?
Yeah.
So, I noticed that alcohol has gone up a little bit. Yes.
And I realize that I'm probably, expanding our friendship by keeping you on the air.
No, you're fine.
I will let you go soon. But I just, you know, a friend of mine, we've mentioned this on our airways before, a friend of mine has been to Japan extensively, like, you know, he's been there like 14 times. He loves Japan, and the reason I'm pointing that out is because he said, you know, everyone thinks that Japan's expensive, and I know you've been there as well. He says, if you know where to go, Japan is not expensive at all. Would you say that tourists in Thailand get stuck in this tourist trap of paying more, and are you wiser? I'm guessing you are.
Well, I just noticed that in some areas, they're charging tourist prices for alcohol. And even like this one place called Northgate Jazz Club, amazing jazz club in Chiang Mai. They get a lot of foreigners in there. They also have Thai people in there. But, you know, a down-to-earth bar, I thought the drinks were quite pricey. And I agree with your friend. If you know where to go in Japan, like, accommodation's expensive in Japan, but food doesn't have to be, and neither does beer.
Yes.
It depends where you go and drink. So, you know, yeah, I mean, if you go to a local place, you're going to not pay as much. And a lot of people will go and just drink from 7-Eleven. So, you know, on New Year's Eve, for example, I was walking around, and Thai people tend to sit on the side of the footpath in front of their houses. They've got food. They've probably gone to a street store and picked it up. And they've got beer and they sit and they drink and they eat. And they tend to always eat when they drink. There's none of this Australian macho eating is cheating crap.
Yes, you know, yes, good point.
They're there to drink, but they're there to eat slowly. And that's why there's so many street stalls. And, you know, I was at a bar that's frequented by a lot of foreigners in Chiang Mai because my friend lives in that area. And there's a lot of foreigners that live in that area. And that wasn't that expensive because it was a little enclave, right, outside of the tourist spot. Mm. And then, you know, the dried squid man pulls up with his little cart with his dried squid. And I didn't even see it. I could smell it. But, you know, they pick while they eat because they want to be able to keep drinking. Sorry, they pick while they drink.
It's very responsible. And, you know, in terms of, okay, I'm not saying that, you know, excessive drinking of alcohol is responsible, but the fact that they're eating and drinking is a big deal, isn't it?
And but they do that in Italy as well.
Yes, of course they do. And so, you know, Italy and Spain and, you know, places in Western Europe where you got kids of 12 drinking wine, which I think is actually a good thing, but we're going on a bit of a tangent with that. But, you know, I honestly think that, you know, when you paint a beautiful picture when you talked about people just sitting on the side of the, and I witnessed this myself, just how chilled out they are and how less challenged they are by society. And that, you know, you painted a beautiful picture of people just ordering nice, reasonably healthy food and having a beer or whatever they drink. It's a beautiful picture, and we don't have that in the Western suburbs. the Western world, I mean.
But they even have an attitude, Henry. It's called Sanuk, right? And Sanuk is, I believe it means happiness, but it's also a feeling. And Thais believe that you should do everything with Sanuk, whether it's eating, drinking, going to work. You know, things are there to be enjoyed.
Mm.
We could have that. We could do well to have a bit more of that attitude. You know, most of the time when people go out to drink, you know, here in Australia, eating is cheating. They've got an agenda to just go out and get wasted.
Yes. But
Thailand, it's about having fun, not just, oh, let's get drunk.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that we in Australia, being as anglicised as we are, have got that from Britain. No offense to our British listeners, but you know, really, you know, I saw a documentary in Britain about the British drinkers during the day, and you know, they, oh God, they just get drunk in the middle of the day in many towns in Britain, cities in Britain.
You see them? Do you see them in Thailand doing it? The Brits too.
Yeah, the Brits. Or let's not attack the Brits too much, but they generally Westerners. Sorry.
I said, I've got a British passport. I can comment, right?
Yeah, well, I've got an Irish one. I might get beaten up. Before you go, Melissa Grima in Melbourne, what are you having for dinner tonight? Because I know you're hanging out.
No, so, Henry, it was more so I haven't slept properly since I got back.
Oh, God.
Last night, I couldn't sleep. I didn't go to bed until 8 a.m., and I didn't fall asleep until 9 o'clock.
Why is this?
Oh, look.
Are you going to say like it's jet lag or?
I don't feel like I've got jet lag. What I feel like is I've ruined my sleep patterns because I didn't sleep on the overnight flight. And I came back and I went to work and, you know, I had an hour.
Oh, God, you had to work when you got back.
Well, that's my choice for taking the overnight flight, you know, not wanting to take an extra day off, you know, and not wanting to take the morning flight. So that's on me. But because I had an hour's sleep during the day during my lunch break, then, you know, my body clock got thrown off and I haven't been able to write it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I had a snooze at 6 o'clock in the afternoon one day during the week and then I didn't sleep that night as a result. So
yes, and you and I, we've talked about sleep issues, yes. And clearly we both have sleep issues. So I totally understand what you're talking about because, you know, if you have even mild insomnia, which I know you've got another term for this than me, it's a big deal when your sleep structure, and you travel so much internationally, it must cause problems every time you come home.
Oh, it's really done a number on me this time, and it's weird because Thailand's only 4 hours behind.
I know.
You know, and then I'm flying for work next week, not this like this week, but the next week. So I really need to catch up on my sleep before I go.
Where are you going now?
Oh, I'm just going to Abu Dhabi for.
Oh, is that it? I'm just dropping into Abu Dhabi. I love the way you're so flippant about this.
I'm trying to downplay it, you know. I'm going away for work. It's a work thing. So, you know,
and we were talking about your stand up, which I aired last week on this radio show, Bondi Tunes International, and it was interesting. You know, I was fascinated by that whole experience. And I'm going off on a torrent again because I do that because I'm on chemo for cancer, okay. In case anyone's wondering what the hell I'm talking about. And I was fascinated by that. And I would say to you, please keep pursuing this.
Oh, thank you, Henry. That's really nice of you. You're the first person that's listened to that.
And then
on the radio, I haven't shared it with anybody but you.
And you've shared it with a couple of 100,000 people now. I hope you're not shy about that.
From these people.
Sorry?
I need some feedback. What, you know?
Oh, we don't get feedback on radio unless you're skipping away a car.
What do I care what people think, right? I mean, I have fun doing it.
We all pretend that we don't care what other people think, but we all do. That's the truth.
Yes.
Melissa Greimer, at such short notice, thank you so much for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me, Henry.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio. And it's always lovely to have Melissa Greimer on the show. Thank you so much, Melissa, again. In the next hour, we've got lots more coming up here on Bondi Tunes International. Stay tuned. Did I just say that? Stay tuned. It's such a DJ thing to say. See you in less than 4 minutes.
Henry O'Donovan.